The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
So we're a year into the pandemic now. We've had about 220,000 confirmed cases of the virus, 4,319 deaths related to this disease. Three lockdowns. We're in the third at present. So where are we going for the year ahead? Well, we're joined now by the Chief Executive of the HSE, Paul Reid. Paul, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here on The Last Word this evening. The first thing I want to ask you, of all the things that you've experienced and learned over the last 12 months, what are going to be of the most benefit to fighting COVID-19 over the next year?
Good evening, Matt, and you're very welcome. Yeah, I think when you look back, you just reference a very tough year on everybody. And there's a few things we can draw on, I think, to give us confidence for the year ahead. Firstly, I think a lot of the changes we've put in place in the health service and how people experience their health delivery, I think, are ones that we will sustain for this year and invest into the future because they have worked and are the right things to be doing. So things like better access for GPs to diagnostics, things like people getting treated, particularly elderly people getting treated at home, better supports around some of our elderly and vulnerable people throughout COVID, a very different role of the likes of our national ambulance services, you know, heretofore just paramedics response, now out in the community doing testing centres, community assessment hubs, remote outpatients clinics, you know, strengthen our bed capacity in our hospital. So there's a lot we've done that are the right changes we want to sustain for the future. Now, equally, along with that, you know, building a testing and tracing model that didn't exist a year ago, where we had one lab doing 600 tests. We've now capacity to do 175,000 tests a year. And I guess finally, bring it right up to date is obviously our vaccination programme, which will make this year a very different
year. I'll get to the vaccinations in a second, Paul, but what does it say about the way things were done in the health service that it necessitated such an absolute crisis to bring about dramatic change, which you now say has made for a better system?
Well, Matt, I took this job up about 20 months ago now on the basis of, you know, I really wanted to be part of the reform agenda for our health service. And there is a good strategy in terms of an all-party, thankfully agreed, Sláintecare, which was really about relieving the pressure on our acute hospital system by investing in community. Now, we are not there. There's so much we have to fix about our health service, and I'm very conscious of that working with our board. But I do know in the crisis phase of pandemic, we had to put in very quickly and very immediately support and investment to protect the public, to keep them safe so that people could still get their care, but also protect them in a global and national pandemic. So a lot of the investments were the right things. I think we have accelerated them over the last year in particular. And I think we brought many initiatives to us where, you know, if you like, in PowerPoint or in spreadsheets, into actually action. And, you know, that's one thing that I want to make sure and our board want to make sure, we're going to launch our corporate plan tomorrow, that's part of our future now, not just the one-year initiatives we've had to put in place.
But what about having enough doctors and nurses in particular, frontline staff in place, not just to deal with COVID issues, but all of the other issues in the health service? Because the reports still are that we have an enormous number of vacancies and that people and doctors are not taking them up or they're not being advertised, and the same goes for nurses.
And Matt, you're reflecting a very real frustration of the public over many years. So what happened last year and what happened next year? Last year, we've recruited an extra 7,500 people into the health service, 1,800 nurses. We've recruited a net extra almost 210 consultants. But more importantly, looking into the year ahead, with government funding of an extra €3.5 billion for the health system, it's a 21% increase in investment. That facilitates us now to have a real strategic workforce plan for the future. So 16,500 extra employees will be in the health service by the end of this year. That's 3,500 extra nurses, 350 consultants, and 4,000 other healthcare and social care professionals. So it is true.
Sorry, and who are the rest? Is all the rest administration?
No, it's a whole lot of medical, dental grades all across the system. And there are some administration. A lot of our hospitals, a lot of community services, testing and tracing will have to be recruited. Some of our vaccination and vaccination programme will have to be upscaled. So no, it's a very significant medical workforce that we're recruiting.
It is, but even when you may say a few thousand nurses and a couple of hundred doctors might sound impressive enough, but does that actually still bring us anywhere near the numbers that we need, given the volume of work that is there and probably the increased volume to try and catch up on all of the things that might have been delayed because of COVID?
Yeah, and one of our concerns, I mean, I don't create any impression that COVID has been is good for the health service. It's not good for the economy, it's not good for society, it's not good for the health service, but I'm trying to just outline some of the changes that have been made. But particularly in terms of catching up and addressing issues like backlogs and waiting lists, yes, it has been a very significant impact on us over the course of last year, on our outpatients list, on our day cases list, on our scopes. In the investment plan, the National Service Plan investment for this year, for 2021, there's €240 million in there for us to address what's called access to care, so looking at some of those waiting lists. And we're going to have to do it in a very different way in the way we're working with our board and with the minister, which will be firstly looking at how do we create extra capacity in the public system with our own consultants, our own nurses and doctors, and we're going to look at that. Secondly, how do we give GPs access to diagnostics in the community? And we've already started that process in our winter plans, happens now today. Thirdly, we will look at our engagement and work with the private hospital system, because there has to be a National Health Service, and yes, there will always be a private element, but we are working very closely now, even in COVID, with the private hospital system. Last week alone, over almost 3,500 bed days and bed nights were taken up through the private hospital system from the public patients. So we see, and also new ways of working, there's new technology solutions, new e-health solutions where we can do outpatients in a very different way. There's new CAMs, pill CAMs, literally a tablet for, you know, for scopes, when people get scopes, not having to go to a hospital, remote monitoring. So we have to look at a very new way, a very different way for the future.
Yeah, will you be able to maintain this impetus, though? Because is there not the danger that as the pressure perhaps from COVID is alleviated somewhere, that you'll be going back to all of these PowerPoint presentations and lengthy discussions rather than taking actions to get things done?
Well, you know, there's nobody more willing than the health service and all of our employees who've battled really hard and have had a very exhausting year, as has the public, to make sure that what we have done differently and what has worked is sustained for the future. They certainly want to get away from COVID and everything that is bad about COVID, but we equally want to protect what we have put in place that is good about the health service. So, you know, everybody is anxious to continue, I guess, a process of change and reform in the health service through recruitment, through extra people, through extra skills, but equally through delivering the services in a very different way, that the emergency department is not the first port of call for people's care. You know, so we have to do it very differently. And COVID has, your reflection is fair, COVID has meant we've had to accelerate it and do it differently, much quicker.
What about burnout, staff burnout? How are you going to manage that? Because as perhaps the COVID burden has lessened and as other illnesses now are getting more priority, how are you going to ensure that the workers who spent so much hard time over the last year are going to be able to continue to maintain the burden that they've been taking?
Yeah, and that is a real concern for us. And throughout last year, each time we come out of a wave, it seems like the virus outmaneuvers us when, you know, we're trying to give people a break. So as we came out of the first wave, we got into summer, people were beginning to take breaks, and we're encouraging people to take breaks, and then it hit us again in August. Over Christmas, we thought we could give people some level of break, and immediately it caught us again. So it has been a difficult year. We have put in a number of supports for staff from a range of ways to support them, including mental health issues and physical health. So we are very conscious of our staff, what they have been through for this year. We do want to make sure we can give people breaks as they are due them, because they have given. I've worked for 30 years in the private sector, Matt, and, you know, I have never seen a pace of change implemented across such a wide range of areas by so many people in such a short space and time. And, you know, it's probably not something that health services is recognised for, but I do really see the pace of change that people have implemented this year.
Now, what about the vaccine rollout? This is probably something that in the end everyone will get measured by. So how confident are you that you're getting, once you get the delivery of the vaccines, that you're getting them administered as quickly and as efficiently as possible?
Yeah, well, I've just come out of a very high-level task force meeting just about an hour ago where we've been just going through all of the progress on the vaccine programme. But what we can very clearly demonstrate, Matt, is we are administering our vaccines within the week that we get them. And in fact, it's within a 3 days from delivery to our cold chain storage, right out to the locations for them to be administered and to be administrating people within 3 days, because we know to date from the stocks that we've got, we've received 520,000. 487,000 doses are available because we have to keep a small stock of buffer for people's second vaccination. And if you take of that 487,000, 440,000 vaccinated, you know, so we're doing it within a 3 day cycle. And that's week on week from where we get it. When we look forward ahead, as we get into much bigger numbers, and we are dealing with numbers that will scale up, that's our plan then in terms of more vaccination centres all across the countries. GPs being very involved in the programme, pharmacists being very involved in the programme, about 40 mass vaccination centres all across the country. We've trained about 7,500 people now in the vaccine programme to support us in those centres. But again, that's all based on delivery and volumes coming to us.
And will you make adjustments in your decisions as to what vaccines to give? So, for example, the AstraZeneca, there now seems to be a shifting position in Europe that it is effective in the over 70s. There also are now issues coming up with the Pfizer vaccine that, according to Italian studies, may be less effective in people with obesity. So will you start moving around perhaps the supplies to take into account new information as it emerges?
Yeah, and I've always been of the view, as the vaccination program progresses across the world, there will be much more better data analysis, what vaccines, what age groups, what parts of the population, what level of effectiveness. And we're beginning to see that, as you just described. Now, we take our guidance in the HSE from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee. They assess all of this. So far, they have assessed, first of all, prioritised the various groups. I won't go through them all with you. But they've set out the sequencing in terms of, and we're making really great progress with addressing the most vulnerable groups and the population. So they'd set out the sequencing. They would also set out what vaccine type for what groups. And equally, thirdly, as you said, they will assess data as it emerges. And that may influence a change in the prioritisation. And it may influence at times the change in terms of the vaccine type. You know, so already, you know, in the short period we're in this programme since the end of December, you know, we've changed our operational plan probably about 9 or 10 times at this stage based on the various advices and changes. And that's what we will have to continuously do.
OK, just to finish, Paul Reid, we're seeing things today, like, for example, CSO data saying that more than a third of the population are not staying within 10 kilometres of home, even when they're not supposed to move beyond 5 kilometres. Perhaps more of a voice being given to those who disagree with the restrictions. From your point of view in running the health service, how worried are you by the possibility and prospect of a fourth wave? Or would you be confident that the rollout of the vaccination process will stop that happening?
Yeah, well, look, firstly, to always acknowledge, you know, the sacrifices people have made in this country have been phenomenal with their families, in many cases with their jobs, and in many cases with their business. So people have suffered quite a lot. And we have made great progress, particularly over the last couple of weeks, against all measures of the virus, against all measures of hospitalisation and ICU. You know, however, I want to caution that to say again, you know, this virus tends to outmaneuver many of our plans. We still have a level of hospitalizations that's quite a concern for me. We've about 570 people in hospital today with COVID. 132 of those are in ICU. We're still at our hospital level in surge, national surge level. So that means that we are moving people between ICU, between hospitals in some cases. So we're still at a high level of the virus in the community. It's a high risk because of the variant, and people know that, the higher transmission levels. So we made great progress. My concern would be that could turn very quickly if we don't sustain it and really get it down to much lower levels.
Because we've just had Tom Parlin on, for example, from the Construction Industry Federation, saying that he believes that building sites, for example, all of them should be opened up because the ones that are open have been safe and all the rest of them would be safe as well.
Yeah, and I fully understand that. And look, from a health service perspective, a longer sustained lockdown or high levels of restrictions, you know, they're certainly not good for the economy, they're not good for society, and they're not good for the health service either, you know, because we deal with some of the effects you just mentioned earlier on and people's mental health effects. But there's times where they're needed, and they're needed now. So, and the likes of what the Construction Industry Federation are advocating for, and I don't understand it, there are choices that government can make when, you know, in the round across a range of measures, between advice from NEFID, between advice we can give from the hospital system, and the wider economic and social advice they get, where they would deem, you know, what levels can open up at different stages. So I fully understand it, I really wish we do give government some of those choices and some of the measures continue so they can make those choices.
Paul Reid, Director General of the HSE, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word at Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.